Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater and your moderator for this morning. Today is Sunday, July 12, 2026. The share ID numbers for Friday, July 10th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,624, that's 23624. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,625, that's 23625. This morning, A Vision for You presents a closer look at step six, aiming for perfection. Step six reads, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. As the Big Book reminds us, our liquor, and for you and me, our binge foods, were but a symptom. The real problem centers in our mind and is reflected in the way we think. It's reflected in the way we feel. And most importantly, it's reflected in the way we behave, our actions, our character. The 12 steps are the foundation of our recovery, and step six marks an important turning point. Taking a searching and fearless moral inventory, admitting the exact nature of our wrongs, and becoming honest with ourselves and another human being, we are now asked to become entirely ready to let go of the character defects that have stood in the way of our recovery and usefulness to others. This step asks us whether or not we are entirely willing to have God remove all our defects of character. Are we willing, in other words, to behave differently from the way we have in the past? Our character defects cause us, as well as others, pain and can lead us back to compulsive overeating and its nightmarish consequences. It is urgent, therefore, that we deal with these defects of character. The AA 12 and 12 assures us only step one, where we made the 100% admission we were powerless over alcohol, can be practiced with absolute perfection. The remaining 11 steps state perfect ideals. Step six is difficult, yes it is, but not at all impossible. The only urgent thing is that we make a beginning and keep trying. Joining us today to share his experience on step six is Ken W.H., a recovered compulsive overeater from North Carolina. Ken is a beloved member of A Vision for You, a loyal servant of Overeaters Anonymous, and of course is dedicated to the 12-step way of life and carrying the message of recovery. It's with great appreciation that I welcome Ken to the line. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you so much for getting us started. I had almost forgotten that next week is our celebration, so I'm blessed to be sharing this week. I've been fortunate to share 6 years of this 14, and I'm very, very grateful to be sharing this morning. Step six. I'm going to give you a brief history, and hopefully it will begin to explain why step six means so much to me. I really like to sing, and church was a place I came to learn some pretty beautiful music. And in high school, I learned a lot of great classical music used in church, especially in Latin. I wasn't a part of the Catholic tradition, but I could sing from memory, the Mass in Latin. That's how much I like to sing. Some of that remains with me today, even though I don't remember what was for dinner last night sometimes. I sang well, and I fit in. I felt accepted in the musical environment. Outside of it, though, outside of that environment, I was just another fat kid. And I took extra food and cookies from the church buffets. I ate a lot and often. With it came the abuse that so many of us are familiar with. I hear on the lines, fatso, fat boy, blubber belly, chubby, etc. Well, phooey. I used to say, phooey on you. I'll just have another ring ding. Thank you very much. Yeah, I ate. And I ate because I felt completely out of place, and that's the only thing that helped me to feel good. Of course, I tried to overachieve some areas just to prove to myself that I wasn't worthless. And I did achieve some things over time, but usually it was just enough, almost. I had an SAT math score of 718, so off to a 3 years. I lasted in a all-male technical college, technical university. And I was there for 3 years, finished two. Obviously, I wasn't paying a lot of attention in class, and I left it. I came to find out that trying to study and nurture my active addiction to food and my blossoming addiction to alcohol and gambling didn't work real well for me to pass the classes I needed to pass. So a friend of mine was fortunate, got me a job in New York City where I could eat what I wanted, drink and gamble on the train commute from Jersey into New York, a two-hour commute. First, I worked real hard to hide this, eating breath mints like candy, a whole roll of it before the welcome home kiss. And I know my wife is listening in, and probably that's a painful one. When things got worse, which they did, borrowing, I put it in quotes, borrowing money at work, stealing food, lying, and trying like crazy to be special, to look okay, and to overachieve, to work too hard, work too many hours. Yeah, I was Johnny on the spot. After I left the New York job, I found another, working for another friend, working for, and that's an important statement because I always worked for somebody. I never achieved a level of competence that I could actually own my own business, that sort of thing. But I was, again, working in an environment that I could do a lot on my own. I was given responsibilities, which I took full advantage of. In 1982, AA happened to me, and I have been alcohol-free ever since. That's 44 years ago. Unfortunately, I must follow up that statement, that great statement, with the fact that I ate compulsively for 38 of those years, of those last 44 years. In and out of OA, in and out, and in and out. Going to meetings and identifying and being accepted as a sugar eating COE. Still hiding and lying. I was alcohol free, but not sober in the fullest sense of the word. When I was drinking, coming to terms with step one and two were not easy for me, and that's how I ended up getting back into OA through Vision. But when I was drinking, the insanity part, who was insane? I could work real hard. I had a job. I could function. I was a functional alcoholic. But there was a time that I would be driving home from work along a highway. It was evening, so it was dark. And when I was drinking while I was driving, of course. And before I threw the beer cans out the window on this dark highway, I wiped the fingerprints off so that I knew that if I didn't, the police would find it, they'd check it out, and they'd come and get me for littering. Well, when the beer cans were gone, I did the same thing with food wrappers, wiping fingerprints off food wrappers. That's my definition of insanity for me, and it also spoke to the paranoia that I got myself into over time, that I was going to be found out, and that terrified me. The last thing in the world I wanted to do was admit things that I had been doing. But then I can start to give you some of the good news that happens over time when you hang around long enough. This may happen, but it also takes the action that we'll talk about later. But through it all, I am convinced that although I walked away from all of that church time that I had and the singing and everything else, I completely walked away from it for many years. But I'm convinced that God, the God of my understanding, or at least just plain God, had another plan for me. And gently grabbing me by the nape of the neck like a mother cat with a kitten. And God said to me, "You're coming with me, Ken. You've had enough." So in the midst of my COE, my compulsive overeating, God guided me amazingly. In the midst of my mess, in the midst of what I'll call a dry drunk, very dry, but still eating like a crazy man, guided me through a process that after flunking out of school the first time, taking me to an academic achievement award as I received a master's degree. Go figure that all out. It didn't fit, didn't make sense, but once I got going in my career, my study, master's degree, I was learning insatiably. I studied and read at that point, just like an alcoholic or compulsive overeater, constantly, just at it constantly. I would be up till all hours of the night reading. I couldn't stop reading. The obsession was there, and I made that an addiction. But the fact is, God was making some progress with me. I didn't know to where, or I didn't know how it was happening or anything else, but it was. And then 6 years ago, on an Easter Sunday, it was an afternoon and walking out in the park, and I was faced with the reality that, and I came right out and said it, which surprised me completely, that I had never been abstinent in OA for 38 years. Never been fully abstinent. There was always a trace or some form of my addictive foods in my body. Never fully abstinent. But that turned out to be what I call my Kairos time. which in Greek means God's time or the fullness of time. In other words, it was time. It was time for God to have his way in my life, and that became the start of a slow process. An AA friend in a standard AA meeting, OA meeting, I'm sorry, an OA friend, she suggested I might want to try a Vision for You. And I did. I'd never been on a phone meeting before. I didn't quite frankly care for it much, but it was COVID time, and face-to-face meetings were shut down. So I got on the phone. I didn't like it very much at first. I almost walked away. But there again, the power that's been working in my life that I didn't know about directed me to stay. And I did. And I eventually got the title page, and I started through the process and have been coming ever since. I rarely miss a 7 o'clock meeting. And if I do, I listen to you later. Check it up on you. You know how that is. Well, finally, after a full study of the doctor's opinion that I had known was there for 38 years, but I never fully studied it. What I found happened in the other program for me is we immediately went to Chapter 5, how it works, saw the steps, and got busy. And for some reason that only God knows, the plug was in the jug, and I didn't have to drink again. I didn't have to relapse. Whether or not I ever read fully the doctor's opinion, I don't remember. But anyway, OA, Vision for You, basically said, Ken, we're going to read, not only read the doctor's opinion, we're going to do it paragraph by paragraph. So, I finally learned what it meant to have the addiction of compulsive overeating. It made sense, and it changed my whole life. My whole attitude and outlook upon life changed. And so that's how I got here. I got through the eating. I got through some of the other addictions, and I'm here today. And I'm a free man, and it has a whole lot to do with coming to terms with step 6, which I guess it's about the shortest, next to step 7 in the big book. Bill was, I think, this is my opinion, I think Bill W. didn't feel he needed to expand on it, that he was at his best trying to keep it simple. And it is simple in its reading. And I know what we read on the wall. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And in the book, it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, and that means following step 5, we sat down for an hour with the big book. That's what it tells me in the paragraph before. And if I'm satisfied, well, then I look at step 6. And we emphasize willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all, that's a pretty complete word, all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can we now take them all, and to emphasize that, he says, everyone, if we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us to be willing. And that's all it says. That's all it says. And this tells me that this step is about my relationship to a power greater than myself that has solved or at that time could solve my problem with alcohol, with food. And that's what's happened. And that's what this step is about for me. It's about that relationship. I mean, it says throughout the big book in all kinds of different places that our relationship to God has got to be number one. The daily reprieve, contingent on maintenance of spiritual condition. So this simple step is about God. And what is very, very important to me, became very important to me, it took a long time, having been someone who worked so hard to cover, to hide, to satisfy myself with my addictions, for someone like that to turn around and move to a passive voice and say that I was ready to let God remove all the defects that were in the way of my relationship to Him, all the obstacles in the way, but it was a passive sort of way of looking at things. God was going to do the removing. For the longest time, I thought I had to get right with myself, that I had to do it, that if it didn't come from me, it wasn't effective, or it wasn't going to happen, or it wasn't going to get completed. And this was really the first time, and even in all my theological studies, that the first time of thinking really, really personally in a passive voice, having God removed, that was the answer. That was the letting go. That was the surrender. Surrender to the fact that I can't, and something else is going to have to do it through me. And I have to participate in that process. One of the reasons this gets to be important for me, this passive voice, in the midst of active step work, it sounds almost like a contradiction at times, but the program is a program of action. I hear it spoken all the time in meetings. And yet, at times, that may even, for me, it overshadowed the fact that there's a passive part of this program as well. And frankly, it's in step one for me. I admitted powerlessness. That means I couldn't. And that something greater than me, something outside of me, was going to have to get inside of me and start making the changes that needed to take place. So this step for me is about God. And although Bill only gave us a paragraph here, 13 or 14 years later, he wrote an essay that shows up in the 12 and 12 for step six. And it's not a paragraph. It's a few more. And I believe it was his attempt to respond to those of us who just couldn't quite figure it out, because it's only a paragraph and we can't figure that out. We can't talk about it very long. It's only one day in the cycle for A Vision for You, one paragraph. And so somehow he might have been getting a lot of questions about, I don't know if it's true or not, but he may have been getting a lot of questions like, Bill, what do you mean here? What do you mean by all, everyone? And what do you mean about this God doing it thing? And so Bill expounded on it in step six in the 12 and 12, which is just chock full of information about what this step is ultimately all about. And that brings me to a concern that I've had that has been a part of my growth that has really changed my perspective on a whole lot of things and helped me to become entirely abstinent. I went to a lot of meetings prior to coming to Vision, and I would hear all kinds of things. And a lot of it was not overly helpful to be perfectly honest. Granted, I wasn't in a position to receive it. I wasn't very open at the time. But at the same time, I heard things that today, if I hear them, I kind of shiver and shudder a little bit. They would have, if I kept hearing those all the time and that's all that OA gave me, I would probably be eating again. It wasn't enough. It didn't give enough substance. I wasn't getting what I needed. And I was hearing things that confused me. And one of the things that's confused me for a long, long time, and that's where this step six comes in completely, is that I kept meeting years ago, and I've heard it creeping into vision meetings, frankly, and it scared me. The ground seemed to be shaking a little bit under my feet when I first heard it. And the so-called slogan or message from that I'm hearing that scares me some is, it's progress, not perfection. And I've been hearing that for years, and I've also heard it in these meetings. And I'm sure that the folk who say it understand what they're trying to say, but what I'm hearing isn't what I believe the book is trying to tell us or what Bill intended when he wrote the preface to the 12 Steps. When he says, it talks about our process and our taking of the program in chapter 5 of how it works. And when he says, on page 60, where he says, the principles we have set down are our guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And I thought, well, wait a minute. It's progress, not perfection. Well, first of all, what's the it? And what I want to say is go back to here. What it is the program, the principles are the it. And it says spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. One of the things that's helped me tremendously is how am I going to get past this? How am I going to understand perfection in the light of progress? Where does perfection fit into this? And I know that sounds like a four-letter word to a lot of people. And I know that perfectionism, which I denied in myself for years and years and years, only to find out that, in fact, I have that in me. That's perfectionism, which is an illness, a sickness. But perfection, spiritual perfection, is talked about in this book. And so how am I supposed to fit all this together? And then I start trying to think it through, and then I get into all kinds of trouble when I do that. When I say, when it says that we can claim spiritual progress, well, who determines the amount of progress I'm making? If it's only progress, not perfection, it's me setting the scale for how I understand my progress. I want to say, it's me. Kashmar, that's Russian for nightmare. If I'm the one that's determining my progress, oh my goodness, the door's wide open to think whatever I want, frankly. Forget the perfection thing. I don't even have to think about that. If I'm thinking about progress, and that's all I'm thinking about. What I've come to understand, there's another way to read the way we read how it works sometimes. The way to read that sentence, and it could be read in the following way, and this is without changing any words. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. These are guides to progress, and that means to move on. To move on in a hopefully upward direction. In my case, that's where I want to go. I want to move upward. But they are guides to progress, to for motion, for action, to move on. Progress is not a destination. Like guides to progress, that place over there, to that place over there, to that destination. Who set the destination? Me. So if I'm only moving towards progress, to get to that place, progress, I'm going to set myself short. It's going to be my understanding of where I'm supposed to go. It's almost a play on words in a sense, but it changes the whole meaning of the word progress and progress in terms of how they're used. I read it verbally. Our guides to progress as a verb, to move along, to get going, rather than as a noun, some place down the road. I think of an old song that the I'm going to date myself really well here. The Kingston Trio did back, way back in the 50s or 60s, and it was called Tomorrow. And there is a town in Ohio, really, that's called Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W. And the song is about a guy trying to get there. And the language just gets so confused for him. He says, in one of the verses is something like, I'd like to go tomorrow and return no later than tomorrow. And the station master says, you'd like to go tomorrow and return tomorrow night. You should have gone tomorrow yesterday and back today, for the train that goes tomorrow is a mile upon its way. such a mismatch of the word that's getting put into different contexts. It just reminded me of how confusing this progress, perfection, progress, and everything else. And I had to come to terms with that. And that was a major insight for me, to know that the goal here is not progress. The goal is perfection, spiritual perfection. That's the goal. That's the destination. The program is the me progressing, teaching me to progress toward that higher goal that's not of me. Because if I set the goal, it's going to be low. If I set the bar, I'm not going to have much trouble getting over it. That's just the way it always was. I just didn't go any higher than I had to. This is pressing me and has been pressing me to go higher and higher all the time. As I go through this, one of the sources, what Bill did in the about around 52, 53, is he began writing this essay out of the Step 6. And Step 6 is chock full of the idea of perfection. So I can't write it off. I cannot dismiss perfection. It's progress, not perfection, dismisses perfection. It makes progress the goal. Claiming progress, just claiming, this is as far as I've gone so far, claiming some spiritual progress does not negate spiritual perfection as a goal. Boy, did I have to come to terms with that. Because I still am coming to terms with that. I don't know exactly what spiritual perfection will look like in me. I don't have to know what it will look like in me. I just have to accept the fact that it's there. it's out there, and that this power greater than myself that I don't fully understand, but I call God nonetheless, is a power so vast that whatever that spiritual perfection is supposed to look like will make it come about. I just need to be on the boat. I just need to be on the bus. And on the I've heard of 10th step trains, and I need to be on that train. I need to be on the bus of those who are aiming to high ideals, and I need to hear those people speak about those high ideals, and I need to be on the bus with them in progress, progressing towards that goal. And by the way, this is just for me personally, and you can do with it what you will, but I don't consider myself to be a bozo on the bus. If I'm a bozo on the bus with others, then we're not going the right way. I used to be the bozo on the bus. I used to think of myself as the bozo on the bus. And my God won't let me do that anymore. My God won't let me be a bozo and won't let me identify myself that way. That's just for me. So if you're having trouble being a bozo on the bus, give me a call. I'll talk about it. I truly was a bozo. But anyway, the step six in the 12 and 12 has nuggets all over it. Nuggets like, therefore it is plain, this is page 68. Therefore it is plain that few of us can quickly or easily become ready to aim at spiritual and moral perfection. We want to settle for only as much perfection as will get us by in life, according, of course, to our various and sundry ideas of what will get us by. That's me. I just do enough. Just get by, Ken. That's all that matters. Just get by. Make progress. Just that's all you have to do, Ken. Don't progress anywhere, but make progress. If that makes any sense. In other words, just amorphous ideas that have no direction, no definition, or anything else. And Bill is basically suggesting that if we do that, we're going to be in trouble. We can become ready to aim, but we're not going to hurry. One guy says in there, well, I'm not going to hurry. We are all perfectionists. Now, that's quite a statement. I don't know that we all are, and it's not for me to say, but I know I was, and at times I think I have a bit left. We're all perfectionists who, failing perfection, well, duh, I'm not God. I'm not going to need be aware when I'm at perfection, I'll put it that way, failing of perfection, have gone to the other extreme and settled for the bottle and the blackout. In other words, settled for a whole lot less, settled for staying on the path to destruction, so to speak. Bill talks about instincts in the 12 and 12 here, and he says, when they, the instincts, natural desires and instincts, drive us blindly or we willfully demand that they supply us with more satisfactions or pleasures than are possible or do us, that is the point at which we depart from the degree of perfection that God wishes for us here on earth. What an incredible statement. God wants the best for me all the time. I don't always want the best for me, but God always, at least the God of my understanding, always wants the best for me. And this is clearly a way to it, is to realize that that best is a form of perfection. It's a superlative. It's the so-called nth degree. I love it in the one on page 68, the big boy. It says, why, that is perfection. I think it's talking about that 100% step one thing. Well, that's perfection. Good Lord. Heaven forbid that should be real. Only step one can be done perfectly. And you got to love it when he says, we were powerless over alcohol can be practiced with absolute perfection. Sounds like a redundancy to me. Absolute perfection. I mean, it doesn't get any more perfect than that, can it? And basically, we come to step six and we're asking God to remove stuff. I'm asking God to remove stuff, assuming, and it assumes that I have done step one perfectly. I have admitted powerlessness, no power, and that my life's a mess. I've admitted that. Do I fully believe it? I better, or I'm not going to get to this place of being able to even think in terms of progressing towards this high idealism of God, this great picture of what I could be and what God intends me to be. It's just an amazing, amazing process. It says in 12 and 12, page 69, it is suggested that we ought to become entirely willing, another superlative, entirely willing to aim toward perfection. Perfection is not a dirty word. It is not a dirty word unless it becomes a sickness. Unless all that I can think about is being perfect, and when I'm not, I can beat myself to death, beat myself to a pulp, and then eat myself into oblivion. And that's where I stand with that. That's again, I'm talking about my opinions, and you can discard whatever you don't like about it. There is one spot that I would invite some clarification on for myself, but any others who want to make mention of it. In step six, in the 12 and 12, it does reference, and it's the closest thing, closest thing to progress, not perfection. It's the closest thing to it, but it isn't. And it says, step 10, page 91 in the 12 and 12, in step 10, it says, we shall look for progress, not for perfection. Does it have a hint of progress, not perfection? It has a hint of that. But in the context of what Bill is saying in the 10th step, it doesn't say the same thing. Step 10 is, for me, in my understanding, my opinion, to help me move on to progress in the direction where a particular troubling behavior is being healed or redirected positively. In other words, I am being made better, more in the image of what God has for me, my very best. I'm moving in that direction. That's what step 10 is about. And so it's looking, for me, it's looking at the outcome or behavior of actually working the steps and being at a step 10 to actually take care of my immediate problems, my immediate mistakes. And so this looking for progress is almost saying, okay, I did this step 10 yesterday. It's the same thing yesterday. Am I making any progress? No, you're not. Am I making some progress? Did I not do it today? Yes, I'm making some progress. I'm progressing. Have I done it now for a week? No. Wow, I'm really progressing now. I'm actually getting to the place where God has taken that away and taking it out of me and moving me toward that perfection, that very, very best for me. And that's the way I understand that, and helps me a lot. And one of the examples, the last example I can give for this whole idea of moving toward an ideal but never quite getting there, is it's a physical and it's a rational fact. Think about this, that if I approach a stationary object, let's say it's a wall, let's say it's an image of God, let's say it's a picture. If I approach that stationary object by cutting the distance in half with each step, I will never reach it. I'll never reach that object. There's always another half. There's always another half the distance. I maybe feel like I'm standing right up face to face with it, and yet there's still a distance. I haven't reached it. I've only cut it in half each time. But the good news is, as I take each step, as I progress one step at a time, I get closer to the object. I get closer and closer and closer. And that is my understanding of what perfection is all about. What approaching God, a higher power, great spirit, power greater than self, is all about. The distraction is, well, that is all true, and since I can't be perfect, I'll never get there, why bother trying? Or to be so, to be perfect. At least I'm making progress. Well, am I? If I said it, if I'm the one that determines, if so, if it's progress, not perfection, then progress becomes the goal, the destination, and it eliminates perfection as a possibility. And that is going to slow me down every single time. Every single time. Because it's going to point me in the direction of saying, well, then that means I'm going to have to come up with a different goal or another goal. I can't do that. I did that for most of my life, and I didn't reach any of them because I set them beyond what I was capable, and I think there was a part inside of me that didn't like myself very much and was doing that on purpose. But today I don't have to do that. Today I can know in the bottom of my heart that when it comes to step six, I am entirely ready to have God remove what's in the way of my relationship to the God of my understanding. I just have to get out of my own way. I have to get rid of all of the distractions, which include my goals. I have to move them out of the way so that I can see what God's good goal for me is. And I'm just really grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober and abstinent and free of a whole lot of doo-doo in my life and living in a way that's happy, joyous, and free, and having the support of a partner that's been with me through it all and stays with me. And we have a relationship today that only God could have manufactured and that only God could provide. It had to come from without, and it has come. And it can come for you, too. I hope that's the case, and I'll pass. Thank you, Leah.
Oh, thank you, Ken, for this authentic, inspiring, and thought-provoking presentation. from you this morning. Thank you so very much. What a gift to our archives it will be. Share ID this morning, 23,629. That's 23629 for Ken's presentation. Ken's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so do stay tuned for that. And we will now transition to a question and answer segment. You can pose a question to Ken by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Pete B.
Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
Judith S. P.
Elaine F., okay. New York.
Rivka R.
Judith, Elaine, Rivka.
Holly D.
Charles H.
Tina H. Tina, New Jersey.
Holly B. Charles. Tina.
Christina J.
Krista S.
Christina J. Krista S. Okay. Let me tell you who I have thus far. Pete B., Judith S. P., Elaine, Rivka R., Polly B., Charles H., Tina, Christine T., and Krista F. Did I miss anybody that already said their name?
Alexis F.
Okay. And Alexis F. Okay, let's get started with Pete B. Hey, Pete. You're up.
I was still muted. Anyway, thank you, Leia, for your service. And thank you, Ken, for your presentation. It was very well thought out and presented real well. So here's my question. First, my statement, right? And the big book says that, you know, and when we get to step 10, sanity is being restored. And I appreciate how you used, how you referenced the 12 and 12, specifically about step 6 and step 10. And in the 12 and 12, it says that step 10 says that we've never developed a habit of accurate self-assessment. So I'm just wondering, curious, what do you do to develop this habit that step 10 is supposed to be helping us with?
Good question. Good question, Pete. I think, and this is just for myself, I know that that word self is spoken of in both directions in this literature. Self is, in this case, positively. Self-appraisal, a good self, accurate self-appraisal. A lot of the time, self is our nemesis. And in fact, when we get to step 3 in the big book, it says that brings us to step 3, and then we spend 2.5 pages talking about self being our worst enemy, basically. And then we get back to step 3 and say the third step prayer. So accurate self-appraisal, the word there that catches for me is the accurate. And how can I make an accurate self-appraisal if I don't even know how to make an appraisal, an accurate appraisal? I have to then turn to the God of my understanding, who shows me through repeated passages through step 10, maybe for the same thing for an extended period of time, that the power greater than myself will show me or expose to me how ridiculous it is that I keep doing the same thing over and over again, and that in fact by doing it, I am not making an accurate self-appraisal. I'm making an accurate appraisal of myself by myself. And that's the scary part. If I'm only appraising myself based on what I see and what I think, and especially what I feel, I'm not going to get anywhere. I've got to look toward the standard that's far above what I see for myself, trusting that it's always leading me in the best possible direction I can go. Thanks for the question.
Thank you, Pete. Judith S.P., your turn.
Good morning, Leah. Good morning, everyone. My name is Judith S.P. here in Maryland. Truly grateful to be here and recover to this moment. Thank you, God. And thank you, Ken W.H., for your very clear and progressively slow unfolding of step six. It's very pertinent to me right now in the sense that I have been letting go of a lot of my defects one by one, and sometimes maybe more, sometimes not. And I've come to a curiosity that there's God's will, there's self-will, and there's will. And will is something I'm not very comfortable with, and I'm not going to go into the reasons for time, but can you speak to the willingness separate from self-will and God's will? What is my will to take me in the direction that I need to go to let go of my defects? Thank you.
Thank you, Judith. Yeah, God's will and self-will. One of the things that has helped me through the years is having studied some other languages. And when you study other languages, you get into deeper meanings of words, meanings that probably aren't even in anyone's mind on a particular day, as the word might be used over and over again, like will. Will you go to the store for me? Sure. I'm willing, but not today. Those kinds of things, using an everyday-to-day language. But the word will, from the Greek background, has hints of and suggestions of God's will being God's yearning for me, and yearning for my life to be happy, joyous, and free, the best that it can be. That one of the phrases or goals represented in the faith group that I'm familiar with has as its first proposition that the chief end of humankind is to worship God and enjoy Him forever. And if that's the case, well, how does God help me to be joyful and free? And that's by seeking His will. I believe God's will for me is to seek His will. And that means setting aside what I want to do sometimes. We confuse want and will a lot. I want what I want when I want it. Not I will what I will when I will it. It's this willingness is about God. And I believe it's God's yearning and desire for me to be happy, joyous, and free, as the book tells us, to live into my full potential, a potential that I don't even fully see at this point or fully know, and I won't fully know. But I believe whatever it is, it's going to be good. And if I do that, then I can start to assess what stands in the way of it. And that's usually my will. And I haven't effectively looked at my will in the light of God's will. I've been looking at it in my own desires and things. So I hope that's somewhat helpful. But I always look to the happy, joyous, and free that I believe God has intended for me and for you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Judith S.P. Elaine.
Thank you. This is Elaine S. from New York. And Ken, oh my goodness, the whole topic of perfection that you went into in such detail is just such an important topic. And I'm so grateful to you for that. And I have a question, but first I want to say that to me, perfection that we're aiming for is trusting God. And this progress towards that. My journey in this program, my journey in life has been, well, in this program, not before, my journey has been to trust God more and more and more. And as I've done that through working the steps, living in 10, 11, and 12, making sure I'm doing my 10 steps, which can sometimes be a little, it's easy to forget.
Elaine, question, yes, please.
Okay, so my question is about perfection, not trust in God, but perfection in our life before we start trusting God. In what ways have you been a perfectionist that you mentioned? You said this is a disease, and how does that affect your relationship with other people? Because I think it's a huge, huge problem, and I pass.
It's absolutely a huge problem. I never really thought of myself as a perfectionist, but I was at times. I overworked. I worked extremely more hours than I was required to. I took responsibility for things that weren't mine to take responsibility for. And I was in a business that was customer service kind of business. And in a customer service business, if you're not perfect according to the customer, you're wrong, which I never agreed with because half the customers didn't have a clue what they were talking about. But anyway, and that was, again, my perfection. I know better. I know better than you. And it would affect those relationships. It would affect the way I thought about certain people when they would come through the door. I prided myself. I was in a clothing care business. That's dry cleaning and all that kind of stuff for many, many years as a first career. And I prided myself in being the best there was in the business to restore a tie that somebody's spaghetti dinner had caressed. And being able to not only get it clean, but to get it pressed, reshaped exactly the way it was, like it was new. That I prided myself in. In terms of, I wanted it to be perfect. In the big scheme of life, how important is that? How important was this tie to be in my life? It isn't. I was thinking perfection in terms of performance, and that's not possible. All I can do is the best I can and be okay with that because God is. God is. I had to let God reach deep down and literally rip out of me what I call an imposter self. The one that kept speaking to me like, Ken, you're never going to make it. Ken, you're stupid. Ken, you're a bozo on a bus. Ken. That imposter that did everything possible to step in the way of my achieving the best I could achieve in God's perspective, I had to get that rid of that. And that took a long, long time and took a lot of outside help. But in fact, it was removed. And that was one of the major obstacles to my understanding perfection in a way that could be helpful and positive and life-giving and vital. So I hope that helps.
Thank you, Elaine S., for your question. Next up, Rivka R.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Leah, and wow, thank you, Ken. That was really wonderful. And my question is, if you could give a personal example of, like, something that you, some character defect that you, you know, didn't feel you could overcome, and then turning over to God, and what happened when you did, how that changed for you.
Yeah, thank you. Good question. There have been a number of them. Most current are the kinds of things where every once in a while it'll sneak out of me. I'll finish a sentence for my partner in life. And that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing at all. I have gotten over that. And I believe that's one of those simple character defects that it was just a matter of time, over time, and practicing not doing that, or saying the same joke 44 times before I get rid of it. not saying the same cute little phrase or something that's gotten tired and worn out, and letting that go and being taken away. On a much deeper level, I think one of the great examples of God removing a defect of character in me that had direct impact on everyone around me, actually it's two things in one. One was the use of profanity at an alarming rate in my pre-recovery life, and also sarcasm. It was awful when I think back to some of the things I said to people to put them down and to break them down. And then I came to learn, and God taught me this through, again, study of a Greek language where sarcasm is actually two Greek words put together. It's sarx and chasm. And sarx is flesh, and chasm is cut. And that's what sarcasm does. It cuts flesh, literally cuts flesh. And I did that constantly. I don't do that today. I don't do that today. That's been removed from me. The profanity has been removed from me. Profanity has been removed from me to the extent that I can only, if I ever go to the theater, go to a G movie, to be perfectly honest with you. I cannot be around it comfortably. I confront it. If it's used profusely in front of me in a conversation or something else, I confront it because it's not healthy for me. God has taken that from me. And I had to let go of it because it was embedded in my language, in my speech. And it was just hurting me, hurting everybody around me. And so that's a major example for me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rivka R. Polly B., your turn, followed by Charles H.
Hi, thanks, Ken. Thanks, Leah. My question was just answered. It was Rivka's, which is what character defects has God removed? Great to hear. Thanks.
Thank you. He still has a bunch to work on. I mean, we're still in progress.
I thought maybe we should get your wife to press star one and enumerate some of those. But anyway, all right, thanks, Ken.
I don't think she would, for starters, and I don't think that'd be a good idea.
All right. Thank you, Polly B. Let's move on to Charles H.
Thank you for everybody doing service. Hey, good morning, Ken.
Hey, Charles.
Hey, how you doing? In the vein of progress, not perfection, you know, we hear a lot of things on the line. That probably does not line up with Overeaters Anonymous or Unity, Tradition One. What is your take on recovered individuals watching what they say? We often hear, you know, hey, welcome to the newcomer, and we hope you get what you want. And then, you know, we hear some things that may not line up with Overeaters Anonymous tradition, steps, and concepts. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm careful because I have to remember that they're my opinions when I look at particular issues in OA or AA or anything else, that I have my own perception of things, my own understandings, my own thoughts. And I have to be careful that they don't become, for me, absolutes. In other words, if you don't get it the way I got it, you ain't got it. I can't go to that place. It took me time to sit and listen a lot to start changing my perspective on certain things in the program. I swallowed everything, hook, line, and sinker early on. I was doing everything that everybody else was doing in the meeting. It works if you work it, you give a lot of love and service and don't pick up and da-da-da-da. I did all of that. until I realized that that wasn't helping me a bit, and I had to set it aside. Can I come right out and say that we shouldn't be doing that at all? That shouldn't be in the... I can't do that. I can't go to that place. All I can do is discard, or I should say store. You know, we say take what you like and leave the rest. I like to say take what you like and store the rest. You're probably going to need it someday. Because if I don't like it now, there's a good chance that I'm supposed to hear it and that it's supposed to bring about some change in me that I don't know about yet. So I need to store it. I need to put it over there. If you will, put it in the recycle bin, but not empty the recycle bin so that I can retrieve it and restore it to the inbox, so to speak. I need to hang on to some of those things that I think I dislike because they may teach me something. I think that would be my response to that.
Thank you, Charles H. Tina, your turn.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you, Ken, for your share. It's, God, no coincidence that I'm on this meeting. For me, there were a couple things, and a few of them have been answered, but you spoke about, like, your 38 years in AA, and then now 6 years in OA, and that's where I am right now. Like, I've been in the AA program, and I've been relieved from that, obsession to drink, but boy, do I struggle in this program with acceptance, and I think my question to you is, can you talk a little bit about how you got there to acceptance, and was there a specific, I mean, you talked a lot about character defects that I'll have to go back and think about, but was there one that really brought you to acceptance so that you didn't, because I don't have 38 years, by the way, to wait for this. I want to kind of get it now, but I've really been like struggling with acceptance and am I truly a compulsive overeater because my life is not unmanageable when it comes to food. I mean, so I'm really struggling between one foot in and one foot out. So hopefully that makes some sense. Thank you.
Yeah. Acceptance. As I said earlier, that moment, one of those moments came with respect to acceptance and had to do with honesty, being honest with myself and getting down to the root and being able to say out loud for the first time in my life that after 38 years of in and out of OA, I said out loud, I've never been fully abstinent. That's the last thing in the world I wanted to say, but it's the first thing in the world that God needed me to say so I could get out of my own way and say, I've not been abstinent. I've not really ever put the food down that needed to get put down. I wasn't being honest. And God finally said, Ken, think about this. And I did. And I surrendered that on that day. It before, so that was essentially my first step, accepting the fact that I had been lying to myself, or just maybe not on purpose, but just deep down inside, fear was driving my inability to look honestly at myself, and then God cleared the way and made that possible in that simple incident on a pathway in a park. Just this idea into your head, can say this, and I said it, and then I didn't believe I said it. That's one of the ways, and actually that's a profound way for me to come to acceptance of the reality of the disease of compulsive overeating, and that it had its own bottom for me to reach, and had its own way of expressing itself. That doesn't mean I didn't learn anything in AA for 38 years. I did. I learned a lot. And I knew a lot. I needed to apply, if you will, exactly what I learned in the 12 steps and apply it to a specific illness, in this case, compulsive overeating and all that's involved in it. And there are differences in terms of the way that illness expresses itself in me whether it's alcohol or food, they express differently, and actually they elicited different feelings and behaviors. But it's nonetheless the same deep down illness of that I needed to surrender to and accept that I in fact had it, and it's okay. This may be one of the only diseases that can be put into permanent remission. And wow, if I'm going to have a disease, I mean, I'm in remission from a couple of cancers, and that's really, really good news. But with overeaters, I can accept the fact that I can stay there, and if I just keep fit in my spiritual life. Thanks.
Thank you, Tina. Christine T., your turn.
Good morning, Leah. Good morning, Ken. Thank you for this share. It's beautiful, and thank you for your service, Leah. Thank God I'm out of relapse now. I've been out for quite some time, but how do you go about helping your sponsees or anyone that comes your way with the frustration of the relapses because they feel like they can't get it right? They hear about this accurate self-appraisal, the awareness this program brings us to, and yet they still can't seem to put the food down so they can get to those places. They find themselves overthinking about all that's shared on the line by, you know, the old timers, and they just can't get there. And I know for me it was a journey of just keeping on going, but how do you work specifically with your precious souls that just are so lost and trying to get out of the relapse so they can begin to have this beautiful awareness that God brings us over time through our journey here? Thank you, Ken.
Fortunately, thank you for the question. Fortunately, the literature tells us that we can expect the possibility of stumbling along the way. And I've come to understand that God doesn't care if I'm stumbling along the way. If I'm making an effort to improve my conscious contact with God, if I'm making an effort to fully appreciate what step one means, and I fully appreciate what the doctor's opinion says, if I always take folk back to the doctor's opinion, not necessarily to a particular step, but I say, read the doctor's opinion again. Read it again. And what in it don't you agree with? Or what in it doesn't make sense? And usually there's something in there that if they're honest and they look at it completely, will kind of indicate where their mind is with respect to being in relapse or constantly going into relapse. Relapse isn't inevitable, but it does happen. And I think what God says is, okay, all right, what can we do today to move forward, to progress, to get a little better, to get a little further away from that relapse, to get a little further away from that thought process, to get a little further away from the effect that the food is having on me physically, to get further away from the allergy, one step at a time. I've had folk who, and this is unfortunate, they stymie me. They really stymie me. They'll tell me, I'll say, how you doing? And they'll say, I'm doing all right. I just kind of went over my food plan a little bit yesterday, but I'm okay today. And I'll say, and they'll say, I'm making some progress. And I'll say, wait a minute, time out. If progress means going off my plan a little from day to day, from time to time, I don't see that as progress. I see that as accepting a short sight, accepting a lower level of perfection. The goal's too low. Well, I'm okay. I only do it once in a while. I don't eat binge food, but I ate too much. Or I didn't eat enough. It's that rationalization that kicks in, and I do my best to try to break through that rationalization when I hear it. that, are you kidding yourself? I mean, you went off your food plan, right? That means you're not abstinent, right? And they have a tough time saying that. They want to stay abstinent. They want to be abstinent. They want to state that they're abstinent, and they're not. That's fooling yourself. That's rationalization, and that's justification, and that's not acceptance. And that's not moving toward a goal of healing and wholeness and restoration. That's at least the way I kind of look at it. Thanks.
Thank you, Christina. Krista F., your turn.
Hey there, Ken. Thank you so much for that amazing lead. Really appreciate your experience here. So my question is, you had stated that you have you only have the ability to go to, you know, G-rated movies now because it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've become particularly spiritually sensitive due to God removing your defects. So my question was, how do you, how do you confront or admonish, like, defects in the people or in the environment around you? Do you create distance between yourself and these people, like with the PG movies? Do you do the same with individual people, if that makes sense? Or do you actually confront it?
It makes sense. Thanks. It makes sense. It's not a bad question or anything. As far as movies are concerned, if I'm going to pay $15 to go watch a movie, I don't want to get cussed out. It's that simple. And I don't need to be watching people making love to each other as close to making love as they do on some of the movies. I don't need that in my life. So I don't pay to go see that. That's my choice. That's my decision. I don't feel like I'm isolating or anything else because I would just be sitting in the seat by myself having paid $15 to have somebody cuss me out. And that's my choice. I don't have to do that. When it comes to people and being in communication with people, I've had some people, this is long ago in AA. AA was notorious for horrendous language until we got our heads together and said, wait a minute, this is not good recovery. I've had people who assume, guys who assume that since I'm a guy, they can talk that way. That's just normal. That's just the way guys talk, right? Well, not right. And I say that. I got to the place, I used to walk away, and now I'm to the place to say, and if that happens with a sponsee especially, I'll say, because of my recovery and because of what I've had to go through to be in the recovery that I have today, profanity is not acceptable for me. And I'm allowed to say that because that's protecting my health, my mental health, and ultimately my physical health. It's saying that it's just not effective for me. It's not helpful for me, and I prefer that it not be used. And it's amazing how many people will say, oh, no problem, and from then on we don't have it. It's just not a part of the conversation because it never said anything anyway. Profanity doesn't speak anything. It just expresses a feeling of some sort. Who knows what the feeling is? But it doesn't say anything. It doesn't add anything to a sentence. And it's amazing how it disappears. People don't use it. It's just not there. And if they're in certain settings, they won't use it. Other settings, they just automatically assume they can. I just simply say that it's not appropriate for me. And it's respected. It really is respected. It doesn't isolate me. It doesn't put me off. They don't say, Ken, go get lost. You prude or whatever. They don't say that. They accept the fact that for my health, I need to make those choices. That's all I got.
Thank you, Krista F. Our final question for today comes from Alexis F.
Yes, Ken. Thank you, Ken. I was wondering, do you consider one string bean over 8 ounces, if that's your meal plan, do you consider that blown abstinence? Because, you know, like you consider it a black and white issue and very perfect. Or do you see a gray area?
Alexis, the old food plan questions or amounts of food, I try to avoid that like the plague. How many green beans you eat is your business. And the issue with that isn't so much trying to create a perfect food plan as it is to be at perfect peace with what I'm eating. So if I am at perfect peace with that extra, so to speak, imperfect green bean, if I'm okay with it, I'm okay with it. If I've talked to God about it, and I've talked to my sponsor about it, or somebody else, if I'm sharing my food plan with somebody else, I need to tell them I'm eating an extra green bean. And they'll talk it through with me, and they'll come to say, oh, yeah, well, go for it. Or are you free when you are putting out your food and that extra green bean falls in there? Are you saying to yourself, gee, I wonder if I should do that or not? Oh, my goodness, what's going to happen? Am I going to go into relapse? You got a problem. Your brain's working. The disease is working if it's doing that to you. But I can't determine what's it's not black and white. I just have a food plan that I follow, certain foods and amounts, and that's where I go. And I'm comfortable with that. I'm at peace with that. It's working. It's maintained my weight now for any number of years. It works. It keeps me healthy. And that's what matters. That's what really matters. So deciding what your food plan is, or whether it's perfect or not, or followed perfectly or not. Frankly, you can't follow it perfectly. So why try? But do the best you can. Be healthy with it. Don't let your mind tell you that you can have three extra green beans instead of one, or it doesn't matter, you know, whatever. It has to be healthy. It has to be healthy in your brain, and it has to not be triggering your allergy. That's all.
Thank you, Alexis F., and thanks to all who posed questions this morning. And, of course, a heartfelt thank you to Ken H. Thank you, Ken, for all you gave to us this morning in your profound and rich presentation. Thank you so much. Presentation share ID for today, 23,629. That's 23,629. We're going to close now from page 164. It's found in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.